He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now, Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. I'm Chael Sonnen. You are listening to the number one podcast. Number one again. Listen, there is a story that resurfaced today. I was surfing something the kids call the internet. And the story came out, and it's a very old story. It's from like, it's about 2006. But it's one of the better stories in my experience in MMA. So here's what happened. I'm out here in Oregon, and Team Quest was a major powerhouse in the world of mixed martial arts for about a decade. And in 2006, the ownership changed and the partners and the coaches and all that changed. In 2006, Matt Lindland owned the gym. He was still competing, and he was the head coach. So store that away. Store that away in your memory. Now, Matt Lindland also had a promotion out here called Sport Fight. And it was a small promotion, but it was a very good regional show. And a lot of guys came through it and went on to have some very good success. So Matt was going to fight in the main event of his own show. Now, there's another guy in Oregon named JT Taylor. And JT Taylor is the head of a gym and a fight team called the Desert Dogs. Desert Dogs. And he's got quite a reputation in the area. He is not a fantastic fighter. I think he had a brown belt in jiu-jitsu with no wrestling or boxing or anything like that to speak of. But you're talking about, you know, Oregon and some small towns and how rumors and reputations grow. And the guy had a good name. So when these guys were going to fight, this was a very anticipated fight for our area. So right before the fight's supposed to go down, this is the main event. And again, it was a good regional show. They had commercials out. They had advertisements out. They had radio ads out. They did everything that the big shows do on a small level. So for our era, we were pretty excited for this match. Week before, JT calls in, says he was painting a house and fell off a ladder. Can't do the fight. And JT's a decent enough guy. I don't mean to put someone down, but I fell off a ladder is on the same page as the dog ate my homework. Nobody's fallen off a ladder. And nobody's dog is eating their homework. So at any rate, he doesn't want to do the fight. So Matt Lindland's got a show to put on, and he's only like 5 days from bell time. There's not really a way to replace this and get it all done through the commissions and get the licensing, and certainly no way to advertise it. So when the fight comes about, Matt's music comes on, and he walks out to the ring, and then he plays JT Taylor's music. Of course, JT doesn't walk out. He's not even in the building. But the song that Matt played for JT Taylor was a Kenny Rogers song called Coward of the County. So Matt gets in the ring. Of course, his opponent doesn't make the walk, grabs the microphone, and does an interview. And he says, he talks about JT, who's the Desert Dog, being the Desert Chicken. And he then puts his hands under his armpits and starts flapping his elbows around like their wings and doing a little chicken dance. And, you know, if you're a small town tough guy, all you've got is that reputation. And your ego is directly related to it. Your whole reality is tied to this reputation that you got from doing nothing. But it's still your identity. So this could not have struck a nerve any stronger with JT. So JT starts threatening through the community that he's going to do a dojo storm on Matt. And a dojo storm is where you storm a guy's gym, his dojo, and challenge him to a fight. So JT's telling people he's going to do this. And of course, we don't believe him. I mean, if he wanted to fight Matt Lindland, all he had to do was show up on Saturday night like he said he was going to do. Well, sure enough, JT says, hey, come Wednesday, I'm doing a dojo storm. Now, JT lives 3 hours away. So there's a lot of moving parts for him to even pull off the dojo storm. One, he's got to get in a car and drive to the gym. Also, to remind you, Matt Lindland was the number one ranked fighter in the world. That time, I mean, he was in front of everybody. He was number one, in front of Anderson Silva and Me, Dan Henderson, Paulo Fila, whoever the guys, Jeremy Horn, whoever the guys were at that time, Matt was ranked number one. So to believe that a local tough guy that fell off a ladder is going to go take on the number one guy was a stretch. Well, sure enough, he did it. So JT Taylor jumps in his car, he drives to Team Quest, he storms the gym, and he's got his hands wrapped. He's got two guys with him that look like teenagers, and they don't want to be there. And they're his cornermen. One is literally carrying the spit bucket, and the other one's got his mouthpiece. This is his cornerman. They're going to go do a fight. Well, this video surfaced of this encounter, and so many people thought it was fake because Matt Lindland was mic'd up, and there was cameras rolling. They're going, well, how could this be real when the cameras are rolling? Well, it was real. Coincidentally, purely coincidentally, Matt Lindland was filming a technique video at the time. So he's mic'd up, and he's got a couple of cameras on him. So when JT storms in, and Matt confronts him, and all Matt said is, hey, man, are you here for me? And JT's yelling, yeah. And Matt said, I don't have time for you. You need to leave. I'm in the middle of something. When all of this goes down, it's all filmed and recorded. So ultimately, JT does leave. Now, there's four or five, maybe six guys at Team Quest at the time. And they're working. You know, you got the guys that are working the desk and the trainers and the coach, they're just working there. That was right in the middle of the day. There's no classes going on. So these guys are kind of puffing up to JT's crew, letting them know, you know, hey, we're gonna bounce this situation if we have to. Well, JT's crew ends up leaving. The JT has two cornermen walk out. But there's one big guy that doesn't. There's one big football-looking player, you know, 300 pounds, the black leather jacket, the whole bit, pretty intimidating-looking guy, and he doesn't leave. So the Team Quest guys surround him, and they want to know why he hasn't left. Well, he had nothing to do with it. He was in there, again, coincidentally, he was looking to sign up at the gym. But because they didn't know him or recognize him, they just assumed he must have came in with his Desert Dog crew. So they figure that out, and everything's fine. The guy left. He did not join the gym after he found himself surrounded and about to get jumped. But it was the story that just kept on giving. There just kept on being all these different punchlines. Great story. Thought I'd share it with you. You can actually go to YouTube and see the video. Pretty neat deal. Look, man, we got a great show today. I'm going to have the world champion on. Carla Esparza, the world champion. Can you imagine that? Being the best on earth at something. And she is. And she's got 12-pound gold belt to prove it. Later in the show, I will have Malky Kawa on, sports agent. Sports agent, he manages some of the top names out there. Frank Mir, one of them, who just had a successful fight. John Jones, Benson Henderson, works with a number of guys. I believe he's even branching off and going into other sports. We will ask him about that and many other things later in the show. Stick around. It's Wednesday. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome. Hey, guys, ever wonder why razors are so expensive? Maybe it's because razors are loaded up with so much shave technology. Vibrating handle, 19 blades, a laser pointer, a compass, a thermometer, even a back scratcher. I don't need any of that, and neither do you, and it's not fair to make us pay for it. I was sick of paying out the nose for a great shave. That's why I made the switch to DollarShaveClub.com. DollarShaveClub.com delivers amazing razors and grooming supplies for a couple of bucks. It's simple and it's smart. It takes 2 minutes to get going, and then you never need to worry about a razor again. DollarShaveClub.com gives you a free handle, and then they send you replacement blades for just a few bucks. You can get blades delivered every month or every other month. Your blades arrive like clockwork. Stop squeezing weeks of shaves out of a dull razor and start treating yourself to a fresh blade every time you shave. Believe me when I tell you, the DollarShaveClub.com blades are fantastic. I've never had a closer shave. Upgrade to the smarter way to shave. Get your shave gear where I get mine. DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. Save time, save money. DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. That's DollarShaveClub.com/Chael.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
We are back to Your Welcome, and as promised, Carla Esparza is with us. Carla, what's happening?
Nothing much, just chilling right now.
Girl, did you eat a $1,000 sundae?
Yes, I did.
I have to know what was on that. I read the headline, and I saw the pictures and everything, and I couldn't get to the bottom. What did that thing have, like golden flakes on it or something?
Yeah, I have like gold paper, like imported everything, gold-covered almonds. It had caviar, the most expensive chocolate in the world, just about everything that you would think would make up a $1,000 sundae, I guess.
Was it worth it taste-wise?
Taste-wise, it was good, but if I had to like sit in my room and eat the sundae, probably not, but overall experience, definitely.
What prompted you to do that? I mean, that did you see if I saw that on a menu, I would be tempted to order it because I just have to know. And my wife would be the same. We would just have to know what it tastes like. Pure curiosity. Is that what got you, or was this a reward to yourself?
It was a combination of both. You know, I saw it a few years ago, and I was like, that is freaking cool. I got to know. And I never really came up to an opportunity where I was like, you know, I should just go and get it. But, you know, after winning the Bella, I was like, I probably deserve it right about now.
You absolutely do. I'm glad. And I, from the pictures I saw, it looked like you even shared with a friend.
Yeah, my girl, Felice Herrig. We were on the show together, and we're just kind of something we wanted to do together.
That's awesome. I love that story. Now, who is next for you?
Next for me is, I don't know if I'm going to attempt to say the last name, but it's Joanna Jacek.
What do we know about Joanna?
She is from Poland. She's an excellent striker, great takedown defense. She has knockout power. She just fought Claudia Gadelha, who's a black belt, and spent some time with her on the ground and still managed to win that fight. So I'm definitely not underestimating her.
Was she a wrestler in Poland?
You know, I don't think she was, but I'm not 100% positive, but I don't think so.
Well, you know, you wrestled in college here collegiately in the U.S., and the foreign wrestlers, as great as they are, as much as in wrestling we look up to the Europeans and we get most of our techniques secondhand from them after it gets trickled down to us, they haven't converted very well to MMA. And my argument for that, what I believe is the case, is because they don't wrestle on the mat over there in terms of they're not rewarded for standing up and getting away or rewarded with a riding time point by keeping their opponent down. Am I right? Do you think that's why they haven't converted their wrestling very well?
Exactly my thoughts. You know, the freestyle and the Greco style, you know, just where you, as soon as you take someone down, you know, you go flat and you have time to chill. I think it's that split second, being ready to, like, scramble and take someone back down that kind of gives people that wrestle in the U.S. an edge.
Now, what about this new Reebok deal? I'm reading your name attached with this in a number of different places. I don't know if that's fairly or taken out of context. But what do you make of the new deal with Reebok?
I think that the new deal is, I think it's cool. I think there's positives and negatives overall. You know, obviously people won't have their individuality anymore, but if this is something that's going to make the sport even more mainstream and, you know, bring more attention to it and make it grow even huger in the long run, you know, when the fighters are getting paid better and when the sport is, you know, so huge, I think it's only going to be a positive thing.
I think that's right, too, and I don't know enough about it. I retired and was out of the sport just before the deal came about. I have no details on it. Did you ever get a call from Dana? Did you get filled in on what exactly they plan?
Honestly, I only know what I've seen from, you know, from the articles. I recently got an email about, you know, wanting our measurements and this and that, but I don't know too much. I definitely don't know anything about numbers.
Okay.
The tier system, number one gets the most. 1 through 5, 6 through 10, etc.
All right. Well, that makes sense. I mean, I get that. That's capitalism. It goes up to the top, and I can't think that the girl with the 12-pound yellow belt like you have is going to complain with number one getting paid the most.
Definitely not.
Now, you train with Colin Oyama. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and that's out in California.
Yes, in Irvine, California.
All right, Colin was one. Coach Oyama was one of the top trainers for a very significant time. He wasn't a master of marketing himself. He was definitely the guy behind the guy, but he has cornered and represented some of the best talent to come through the UFC. I believe he was with Rampage even when Rampage won the title. If I'm wrong about that, he was certainly with Rampage when he became the contender. Now he's got you, the world champion. Who else is in the gym with you? If we're to name drop a little bit, who's in the gym on a regular basis?
Well, on a regular basis right now, I have my teammate Ian McCall, Uncle Creepy.
Of course.
We have a lot of up-and-comers, a lot of pros that are kind of more, I think, that are going to be on the scene coming up. We have a lot of small guys, Ron Scholzing, Richard, Rez Alarcon. We have a lot of guys that I think you guys are going to be seeing coming up here real soon. We have my teammate Shane Del Rosario, but he passed away about a year ago.
Yeah, I'm very sorry to hear that. I knew Shane. It was a great guy. I was very, very sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Now, Uncle Creepy, how is he? Has he earned that nickname?
I would have to say definitely yes.
he prides himself on it. He's proud of it.
That is one entertaining fellow. He's out there, but he's hilarious. I love him.
Give me a story. Tell me something that Uncle Creepy... I'm sure you and I could go back and forth on Uncle Creepy stories, but you go first.
Oh, my gosh. Honestly, I don't know if I can say any more.
I was going to say, I know what you're doing right now. You're cycling your memory for a G-rated or PG-rated story. That's what I'm doing the same thing. That's why I made you go first. I'm trying to find one that I can tell.
I don't know. You know, honestly, so much of it is just, like, stories I hear, just personality, and, you know, I've only seen him be as, like, such a good teammate, and, you know, but he's just hilarious for me. You probably have more stories than I do.
Now, what do you make of, there was a big press conference recently to address performance-enhancing substances. That was the headline. That really isn't what's being tested for. That's miscategorized. There is a banned list and there is an approved list. There's a number of things that are not performance enhancing that are on the list. There's a number of performance enhancers that are not on the list. But at any rate, the substance test is really tightening up and a little bit of clarity is coming to light, which is refreshing. But there's also some big holes in it. What do you make of this?
Well, what do you mean by holes? Are you seeing some, you know, some big things that are missing that need to be on there?
No, I'm not. In fact, it's quite the opposite, Carla. There is things on the list that are ridiculous. And there's things that even a champion like you, I'm quite sure, is unaware she could now lose 2 years of her career for. For example, Advil, ibuprofen is on the list, and it will cost you 2 years, and you will not get to have a hearing or give an explanation. It will be pass or fail. If you have more than 2 cups of coffee in a 15-minute period, your caffeine levels will be out of range, and you will lose your license for 2 years without a hearing and without explanation. I could go on, but I'll use somebody else that we just saw, because you're probably rolling your eyes going, that's ridiculous. Yeah, it is, but it's still the rules,
yeah.
And it's what the Olympic people are held to. In fact, they took a girl's gold medal away because she tested positive for a billionth of a trace of ibuprofen, street name Advil. I think most of us are going to roll our eyes and say, man, I don't care if my opponent takes that. If my opponent's got a headache, I just don't care if he wants to feel a little better. I mean, Anderson Silva is in a jam right now. Now, he had a steroid. That's not good. But he also tested positive for Benadryl. Benadryl sits on the shelf next to NyQuil in every store in the country, and no athlete is going to believe that they're violating a rule if they take it. And if they do, and it shows up, they will not get a hearing. That's a misconception. You do not get a hearing. You do not get due process, and you will be stripped for 2 years. That's tough. Tell me where I'm wrong.
A little bit extreme. You know, if anything, because I remember I had a little bit of a case of the sniffles before my last fight, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go hop and get a nasal spray. And then right before I was about to head out, my coach was like, hey, that's, you're not allowed to take that. you will, like, you are not allowed to take that. You will test positive. We need to go find an approved list of what you can take. And if I just kind of would have not run into my coach or not asked or not said anything, I could have tested positive for my last fight.
Yeah.
So for me, I mean, I think some of the stuff is a little bit over the top, but I think if anything, you know, for right now at least, they should go their way to make sure that we're more educated on what we can't take, especially on the household items. You know, obviously when someone's taking a PED, I'm pretty sure they know what they're doing. But on those everyday items that people take for a headache or for, you know, the sniffles or this or that, I think they really need to go out of their way to make sure that people are educated and know what we're not allowed to take. You know, that we're making conscious decisions, not just making a mistake on, oh, shoot, I didn't know that was illegal. You know what I mean?
I fully agree. And, you know, we want to stop heads. We definitely want to stop steroids and these things that are trying to be snuck under the radar with an intent to cheat. But intent does matter. If you're talking about regular law, you're talking about crime. If you take this isn't a crime, but it is against the rules for the sport. But if you go break a law in society, you get to go before a jury. You get to explain why you did it. You, at the very least, get to go before a judge, which is an impartial third party. None of that exists here. It is black and white. If it shows up in your system, you're out. That is the way the Olympics work. And that is the test that's now being adopted. And it is a jam. And I, Carla, I've always felt bad for the guys or girls, the people who have been reasonable, where they've assumed if I'm taking a legal substance per the laws of the land, it's going to be allowed. And what we're finding out, including with the John Jones thing, is not only is it not true, we're also finding out if you take an illegal, federally imprisonable substance, it can be allowed. Reason does not come into play here, and that's okay as long as we do what you said, which is we educate people. And where it stands right now, and you're talking to a guy that's learned this from experience, sat in those hearings across from the guys making the rulings, there was still nobody I could ask. I could sit in those hearings and ask those very people, is this a lot? And they don't know. And they're more than willing to be candid and admit they don't know. But the problem is, listen, if you guys don't know and you're the government, I'm a lowly cage fighter. You just can't expect me to know more than you. You're the government. Am I wrong?
No, I agree. I think there needs to be a lot of changes in the system. I think it's definitely flawed and it's new. And I think with anything, well, and actually it's not even new. We're adopting an Olympic, like you said, the Olympic programs system. So you would think it'd be a little bit more... they kind of have a little bit more under control, but I think there definitely needs to be changes with it, and it's flawed. But for right now, we're kind of in a position where if we don't follow the rules and figure it out on our own, we're kind of screwed.
Yeah, you are.
Changes.
Yeah, you absolutely are. And this is part of my message here. I think that my tone can be misleading. I'm not upset about the process they're adopting. I'm just trying to lay a little groundwork ahead of time, kind of to protect the sport and the image that, you know, it is going to get worse. We're going to see a lot of people getting popped. And I can tell you, when the headline comes out, the headline is going to read, test positive for illegal substances. There's not going to be a fine print to say it was Advil or it was Benadryl, you know, as Anderson's going through right now.
Definitely.
It's not going to come out.
One of my best friends actually just got caught for taking kind of pretty much a water pill, you know, taking a last minute fight and a pretty much a new weight class for her. And she's just like, oh my God, you know, I'm being punished for this. And, you know, it just, she's not really, you know, she even called in to kind of plead her case, and the phone system was flawed and just everything was messed up. And she said, she's still getting people saying, well, didn't you use steroids? And she's like, no, I used a water pill. Like, it's totally different, but like you said, you know, all people hear is illegal PED, or, you know, they're doing something they weren't supposed to, and they, you know, people are going to be, you know, labeled.
Yeah, well, for sure. You know, if you and I are going to compete against each other, and it comes out that Carla tests positive, and then fill in the blank, let's just say it's Advil, because people can relate. I don't actually know what the water pill you're talking about was, but let's just say it's Advil, If I'm your opponent and I say, listen, guys, I don't care. It's fine with me. If she had a headache, I'm fine with her curing her headache. If you're on Benadryl, like Anderson was, to get a good night's sleep, and I'm your opponent, I'm cheering against you, and I'm still going, look, I don't care. She needed a good night's sleep. She's cutting weight. She's straight. I get it. If we don't care as athletes, I think that that has to mean something. And, you know, you're the world champion, so you know as much about this sport as anybody. I'm an analyst at ESPN. It's my job to know. Let me ask you straight up. Do you know what WADA is? You've heard of WADA, World Anti-Doping. Do you know what it is? Do you know where it's located? Let's start with that. Do you even know the city that WADA is out of?
No, I do not.
All right, let me go a step further. Do you know the state that WADA is out of?
No, I do not.
All right, let me go a step further. Do you know the country that WADA's in?
I could take a guess, but no, I do not.
All right, see, you see the problem. So we've got this list from this agency that has been widely adopted and accepted, and nobody knows. I don't know either. I do not know, and it's my job to know. You don't know, and you're subject to these guys. So we've got this list from WADA. We don't know who the president is. We don't know who the CEO is, the board of directors. We can't get an audience with them. We can't get an interview. We can't question these guys. We don't even know what country they're from. And athletic commissions in America are adopting their policies. For me, that's a cop-out. I feel like an athletic commission needs to set up its own rules, let us know what they are, post it on a website so we can all read it and access it. I don't agree.
Like this,
go ahead.
The system was kind of taken in as like a last minute answer to, you know, this huge, you know, all this media, this negative media that's been coming out towards the UFC. I felt like I read an article that Lorenzo was like, well, we were talking about it for a while, but with all of this, we decided just to jump on it right away. Do you feel like maybe it is something they just try to jump on really quick? And that was an easy solution?
Yes, I do. And I don't know that they're wrong to do that. Because here's my problem. As much as I'm kind of pointing out some of the flaws, I don't have a better suggestion. I think if I'm in the room that's making these rules, I get it. WADA's the most respected list. With that said, nobody else has created a list. Nobody knows who in the hell these guys are, but they are out there. So they've got this list. And the good news for WADA is they do, Carla, they do include everything on that list that we do care about. Everything that you and I are scratching our head, go, no, you can't take that. That's on the list. The bad news is, so are these other things that are ridiculous that nobody knows about. And they'll tell you all the time, you got to reference the WADA list. Well, when you tell a guy that, what you're directly implying is that if it's on the list, I can't take it, which means if it's not on the list, I can. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, that's not true. I tested positive for growth hormone when I went through my whole thing. Growth hormone's on the list, but I never took growth hormone, and I supplied the prescription for them. I took something called somatropin. Somatropin has an active ingredient that is the active ingredient in growth hormone. So if I was to cross-reference the list with what I was taking from a pharmacy, I would not be on the list, which would lead a reasonable person to believe that they were okay. You're not. It requires further research, and we're asking cage fighters to do that research as opposed to the government. And it lends to a problem, and people are getting into this. I mean, people do this with the marijuana argument, where they're arguing, hey, marijuana should be allowed for sport, and sport is now listening. Sport is now not only upped the limit of marijuana and metabolites that you can have in your system, but they're basically kind of just looking the other way. Well, the DEA doesn't agree. They'll put you in prison for it. The FDA doesn't agree. Now, the laws are changing, but they haven't changed. On a number of these things that you and I are discussing, the laws already have changed. It's completely legal. Advil or growth hormone or whatever you want. It's a testosterone that used to be. They're all legal. So the laws have already changed, but the commissions haven't. And it just equals confusion. I'm not even saying the commissions are wrong. I am just saying it's confusing. And if we see somebody like you, who is clearly not using anything, get jammed up in one of these cases because she's got Benadryl in her system, man, that's a problem for me.
Yeah, I actually recently got an email asking for what supplements I'm taking and like to list all the names and everything. And I think that's kind of to try and prevent, you know, people testing positive for things like that. But I don't think they ask for something like, what if you do get a headache? What if you do feel like this or like that? And is there something that you're going to take? Because that's the thing that people are possibly going to test negative for on the test or test positive for, I mean.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, when you talk about those disclosure things, I like those if I think a person should get a pass if they write it down. If you come in and you write, now the fight might get canceled. They might say, hey, you can't fight. Okay, no problem. I didn't mean to be inviolate. If I am, then let's not do the fight. But I don't think they should then be suspended. If they come in and they disclose on a form because they don't know the rule and they're just trying to be transparent and upfront and honest about it, I really think that they should not be subject to sanctioning or fines or penalties or this new mandatory without a hearing or due process suspension of 2 years. I think really if somebody writes down like on the form that you just talked about and something comes up that's banned, that maybe they cancel the fight or maybe they give an exemption and let it go anyway. But I do think that should be a path. For me, the problem is when somebody's trying to be sneaky. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. I agree. If someone's lying about something and not putting it on, they obviously know that they did something wrong. So it just kind of, as opposed to someone writing it down and making an honest mistake.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, you've got a wrestling background and a jiu-jitsu background. I'm told by the kids online on something you might have heard of called Wikipedia that you've got a blue belt. I'm assuming that's old. I don't think you can have a 12-pound gold belt and still have a blue belt. Am I wrong?
I actually have a purple belt. I don't know. Has there been a UFC champ that has had a blue belt?
You know, I just love that you do. I think it's the coolest thing in the world. I love when there's a world champion, but the jiu-jitsu standards of whoever you train under are so strict that they don't just comply. I like it. I like that you're the baddest chick in the world and you've only got a purple belt. I think it's a cool thing. I don't know that one has to do with the other. I respect it.
Definitely.
Now you used to train a little bit with in the same gym at least with Halleck Gracie. Is that right?
Yes, I trained at the Gracie Academy for my first summer of jiu-jitsu.
And have you had any talks with him about doing a Metamorphosis match? Has he talked about getting the women in there at all?
I actually haven't talked to him about it, but I've seen him a little bit over the years. I mean, it's something I'd definitely be interested in. I think it'd be super fun.
Now, if you were to pick an opponent for grappling or for MMA, if you were to pick an opponent, who would you like to get matched up with? Is there anybody out there that, for style, for business, or for personal reasons, that you'd like to have a contest with?
I mean, I'd honestly, there's no specific names that I can think of right now, but maybe just one of the black belt girls who's pretty top notch in the division. Be cool to go like no gi and kind of see how I match up, because I already know that for MMA my jiu-jitsu is really good and I've done really well with it, but you know, to go straight jiu-jitsu with someone at that level would, I think it would be fun and a good test of my skills.
I think that's awesome. I think that's a great answer. I completely accept that. Now when you were on The Ultimate Fighter, and for me that is the ultimate tournament in all of sports, largely the physical battle, there's no question. That's the hardest tournament in sports. But when you add in the emotional factor and the draining factor of being secluded in a house with no technologies, no niceties, no comforts of home from TV, computer, cell phones, conversation with people on the outside world, that makes it extra tough, but it also creates some drama. Was there any drama in the house that we weren't able to see as viewers from our living rooms?
There was tons of it that you guys didn't see. You know, there's only so much, you know, I think in a couple months of episodes. You know, they only can show so much, especially with fights and training going on. Personally, I really didn't have too much drama, but I just saw so much conflict and kind of just cattiness going on, and I try to stay out of it. But, you know, it's kind of hard when everything's, like, right there in your face.
It not only is it hard when it's in your face, there's nothing else to do except to have conversations, even on the things that you're irritated about. There's nothing else to do. This is my sense. I never went through it except as a coach, but I was over at the house regularly. I would talk to the guys. I watched them change right in front of my eyes for the worse. They changed for the worse. You know, they were lonely. Excuse me. They were bored. They were stressed out of their minds. They're cutting weight. And then when somebody gets eliminated and is now no longer part of the process, there's also an open bar in that house. And a lot of them took advantage of it. And now that starts messing with your sleep. You're trying to sleep. They're in the other room singing songs to each other, banging on makeshift drums.
There was a couple of drunken nights, as I recall, at the Tough House. Yeah, it got pretty crazy, but I think a lot of that doesn't get shown because unless the people that are still fighting and, I don't want to say, like, put it in this way, but still relevant to the tournament are, if they're not still in the tournament, they're just really not relevant, so they're not really showing all the craziness and drama that those people have, which are the people that are drinking, and as we all know, that's when a lot of drama does happen.
And knowing what you know now, would you go back and do another season as a competitor on The Ultimate Fighter?
For me, it would just all depend on what's on the line. You know, someone came up, knocked on my door and said, hey, if you do this tournament again, we'll give you $10 million if you win. I'd be like, okay. You know, but if it was, you know, just to go through it, just to get in or, you know, probably not. It just would really have to depend on what's at stake.
Sure.
You know, because there's a price for everything.
No, I think that's right. You know, I never went through The Ultimate Fighter as an athlete. I had an opportunity. I was asked on the first ever season to do it. Randy Couture, who was my coach and manager at the time, was the first ever coach for The Ultimate Fighter. So he got to bring a lot of his own guys. And several of my teammates went. Nate Quarry and Chris Lieben come to mind. And I turned it down. I didn't know what I was turning down. It had never been done. And they were calling it reality TV and these other things. I didn't understand that these guys were fighting and it was a tournament. And I really regret it.
I think you'd have been a hit on it.
Well, I appreciate that. You're a good judge of talent, young lady. But, you know, I really did regret it from a competitive standpoint. I thought, man, this is the ultimate. And I'm like you. I was a wrestler. I'm used to tournaments, taking on multiple people in one day, multiple people spread out over a few weeks, multiple weigh-ins. Yeah, there's some stresses, but it's what you and I are used to. And, you know, how the tournament would, I have no idea. But I did regret it. I always thought, man, that... I would have liked to have done it, and I still fantasize about it. I still think, you know, if I ever came back, I might put myself in that tournament. I may call Dana and go, hey, I won in The Ultimate Fighter, and this time I want to go as a competitor, just because I really am impressed with the accomplishment. And I think they did it right with you. I love that you win the toughest tournament in sports and you become a world champion. I think that's right. And if a guy's already world champion and we can't do that, I think whoever wins The Ultimate Fighter becomes a number one contender. And now, if you don't like that, if you don't like what I just said, enter the tournament. That's all there is to it. If I'm walking around going, hey, I'm the number one contender, let me take on Chris Weidman, no problem. Enter the tournament. That's what I think.
I've had those same thoughts. I'm like, well, you know, pretty much, unless they had a new division, they can't really do that. But if they did it for the number one contender spot, then you'd have a lot of, like, current UFC fighters going in, and I think it'd just be an excellent. That's just a great idea.
You know, I love it, too, and they actually did it one time. They had a show that was called The Comeback, and it was all guys that had been in the UFC and were no longer with the company, and they allowed them to come back, and they said whoever wins this is the number one contender. Matt Serra went through that, won it, and upset George St. Pierre and became the world champion. Travis Luter was in the middleweight portion of the show, won it, and went head-to-head with Anderson Silva, and had some very good success for a number of minutes out there. So I think it's the right thing to do. And, Carl, I would argue that from a ratings standpoint, if you want to look at the business side of it, you're now going to we don't have to just have newcomers go through The Ultimate Fighter. You will get a lot of veterans like me that will forego the paycheck for the accomplishment.
Means as much as they used to, because there used to be so few shows with the UFC that, you know, getting a contract was, you know, very hard. It was very rare. But now it's because there are so many shows, I think it's not as hard to get into the UFC. So I think having something, you know, going through all that process is not, you know, worth as much as it used to be. And I think something like that would be a really good spin on things.
Yeah, I think you're right. And hopefully they're listening and they'll take our idea, because from a fan, I really enjoy the product. But I did get excited when some notable names were on there. I got excited when Roy Nelson got in the tournament, and I knew who he was. I got excited when Kimbo Slice got in the tournament. I knew it wasn't going to go great, but I still enjoyed seeing somebody that I had a backstory on.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, I'm glad we're on the same page. I will not take up any more. You know what I'm happiest about for you calling in, Carla? Not only because I love talking to fellow wrestlers and a world champion like yourself. I wanted to know the Sunday story. That was my number one thing. I needed to know why you paid $1,000 for a Sunday. So I've got my wife sitting next to me right now, who also has very expensive taste, and she's holding up a piece of paper. I'm reading it to you from her. She wants to know where you got the Sunday.
From Serendipity 3 in New York, and you guys should totally go get it.
Okay, I'm going to... She's listening with a headset, and she's holding up the thumb signs like the Fonz used to do. She got both signs going up with the thumbs. So next time we are in New York, Serendipity 3. Is that what it was called, Serendipity 3?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to look for the most expensive Sunday. I'm going to say, give me the Carlo Esparza, and they better have renamed it after you because they just got a free plug on the biggest podcast out there. Carla, thank you for your time, sister.
Thank you so much.
All right, bye. See you, pal. Carla Esparza, wow, she was cool. I wish I would have had more time planned for her. I've never visited with her. Even when I lined up this show, I did it by text message. And I'm kind of glad I did. We were able to talk about everything right here. There'd have been no point, I guess, in calling her because that was the podcast. She was a lot of fun. Impressive girl. Impressive some of the things she said. I tried to get her to call somebody out. Because I thought maybe there'd be some drama that went on in the show and somebody was kind of bugging her a little bit, but I really respect that answer. She said, you know, whoever a successful and top person is, I'd like to go out there and test my skills. And that's a real champion mindset. It's not about the big fights and the pay-per-views and the page. It's not about any of that. A champion just wants to compete and get better. And it's that kind of mind, and I hope she keeps it because it's hard to keep over the years in this sport. It's hard to keep it when you're buying Sundays for $1,000 a pop. Isn't it, Ben? It's hard. Talking to my producer now. So that's very impressive. You know, if we tune in a few years and she's got that same mindset, I guarantee you she's still going to have that belt. When we come back, Malky Calwa. This is going to be very interesting. Malky's an interesting guy, and he is not afraid to talk. We're going to get some very good stuff coming back. Stick around. Listen to these sponsors. Buy their products. Make me look good. I'm Chael Sonnen. You're welcome. Brace yourself. DraftKings.com is delivering a haymaker to the world of fantasy sports. Introducing Daily Fantasy MMA at DraftKings.com. DraftKings is America's favorite daily fantasy sports site where you could win enormous cash prizes every time you play. It's easy. Just pick five fighters, stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to a serious payday. Score points for significant strikes, advances, takedowns, reversals, and sweeps, and of course, knockdowns. Gain bonus points based on which round your fighter ends their bouts. These are the biggest daily fantasy contests for mixed martial arts ever, and they're only at DraftKings. Don't miss out. DraftKings.com awarded over $300 million last year. How much of that did you win? Hurry to DraftKings.com and use promo code CHAEL to play daily fantasy MMA for free this weekend during UFC 185. You could win your slice of $1 billion in prizes being awarded this year. Enter Chael to play for free now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
Hey, kiddies. Adam Carolla here. And good news. My movie, Road Hard, is out in theaters and on demand as we speak. Richard Roper loved it. Jay Leno loved it. If you like to laugh, if you like Howie Mandel, if you like Jay Moore, if you like David Alan Greer, if you like Larry Miller, you're going to love Road Hard. It's available in theaters and on demand now. Go to AdamCarolla.com, click the green Road Hard banner for details on screenings in your area or to order the movie on demand. iTunes, Amazon, wherever. It's there. It's Road Hard. And thanks.
Now, back to Your Welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Here's Chael Sonnen.
All right, we're back to Your Welcome. My next guest, Malky Kalwadi. Now, this was a guy. Let me tell you guys a little bit about him. We did not like each other, and it was for no good damn reason. I prejudged this guy. I got it wrong, as I often do. I got to know him, and now he's one of my favorite guys to run into. If I see him in a room, I will cut through everybody to get over and shake his hand and tell him hello and visit with him a little bit. Malky Kalwadi, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, nothing, man. How you doing?
I've never been better.
You sound good.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm in a good mood. Listen, man, I don't know if you are. There was just a Deadspin. I'm going to get right into it, pal. There was just a Deadspin article that came out, and it said that John Jones's bad influence is none other than you.
You know, Chael, let me tell you something. And the funny thing about that, and I'm just going to get right into it as well, is when I first started off in MMA or in sports in general, there's a few agents in other sports that use the media to their advantage. And I took a page out of their book. And every chance I got, I jumped on a interview, on a podcast, on a radio show, MMA Live, whatever I could do, get my name out there, right?
Sure.
And with that came two things. It came the fact that people knew me, and I preached that I was the best, and I'm the best, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. And I was, and I am, and I stand by that, you know, and I just wanted everybody to know, and I wanted to change things for guys and all that. But with that also comes a lot of hate and people that don't like me for no reason. So this guy from Deadspin, never met him, never spoke to him, never had anything to do with him other than the fact he called me for John. He wanted to do an interview with John Jones. And if you've ever seen Deadspin in general, everything they've ever written about the UFC has never really been positive. Not
always.
One guy there writes anything positive.
Correct.
So I said to the guy, listen, dude, John's a very busy guy. He wanted to come out to Albuquerque and, like, spend a week training with him. And I, nobody gets that access. Nobody. You know, it's not because of anything. It's just that I don't have that freedom to grant that to someone, and John doesn't have the time. This fucking guy goes off and says, hey, I'm the worst influence based on sources close to John. Well, a couple of things there kind of pissed me off. At first, and so here's the thing, right? So when people write all this crazy stuff, I don't really normally pay attention to it. When I saw that article, I was just like, okay, this is just another guy trying to write a story and try to spice it up. But what happened was my daughter came home, and she said to me, Dad, she says, you know, today two kids in my class say that John, you know, failed the test for drugs. Is that true? And I said, yes, Mom. Mommy, that did happen. You know, John was partying, and I had to explain the whole thing to her. And she said, but here's the thing. She's like, Dad, so they told me that they're saying that you're the bad influence. Like, you're the one that's making John do this. And that's why I got really upset, because I really tried to teach my daughter right from wrong, stay away from all the bad things, and I've never lied to her about stuff, you know. So I had to sit down with her, and I had to, you know, remind her who I am and what I stand for. And what got me in all that, what really just upset me was, if that was remotely true, let's just say that this was somebody close to John. Well, everyone around John would be people that I would know that would actually know me. From Greg Jackson, Mike Winklejohn, Izzy, Brandon, whoever, his parents, his brothers, everyone that's close to him knows me.
Right.
But some of his teammates may not necessarily know me, but they'll know of me. And if I come up in a conversation, it could be good or bad or whatever it is. Like, you know, most, you know, guys may talk about managers or whatever, but John will tell you himself, I don't smoke. Not a cigarette, not marijuana, nothing. I don't drink, not a beer, not a glass of wine, nothing, Chael. I completely, for my whole life, not because I was an addict or because I had to go to rehab or anything, just have never, ever done that on my own free will. Just never been into it, never been that guy. So I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do drugs. I don't drink coffee, I don't drink energy drinks. I'm not into all that stuff. You follow? So this is, my daughter has seen this her whole life. And my daughter calls people out that drink. She knows when her mom will have a drink, and she'll be like, she says, Dad, you know, Mom has some wine. And I've always told her, to Mother, look, it's okay. Daddy just doesn't like that. That's Daddy's choice. And one day you're going to have that choice, and I just want you to know that you don't have to do anything to be cool or not cool. And it pissed me off. That whole article pissed me off because, you know, I'm his bad influence in what sense? I don't go out. I'm not a club guy.
Yeah,
I've been to clubs. You know what I mean? I've been to clubs, Chael. I've done that, and you know what? And here's the crazy thing about it. When he had his DUI, I was in Miami, Florida. He was in Ithaca, New York. When he had this test with the cocaine, he was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was in Miami, Florida. The times I am with John, he's never had a problem. So how can I be the bad influence in this guy's life? Actually, I would like to think that I'm the opposite, always advising him to do what's best for himself and his family, to always try to put him in the best light. I've done things for him that most managers won't do for their clients. It's not about money at the end of the day, Chael, because he pays me to do a job, which I do. But aside from that job, there's other things that I go above and beyond for, which he himself has told me, bro, you are the best by far. The things that no one knows you do for me, I can never show you how great. I can never be grateful enough for what you've done. And then I get this article. And again, like I said, the article itself wasn't what bothered me. It was the fact that it got back to my daughter. And for one time in this little girl's life, she looked at me like I could have possibly, you know what I mean, been a fraud. Here I'm telling her not to do something, but then I'm outside telling somebody else to do it. And that was what really kind of got me. That's the most bothersome thing that I think that's happened to me so far in this business.
No, man, that's real. I did not know that. And that is not fair that that happened to you, and I'm very sorry. And I'm glad that you were able to have that candid talk with your daughter. I'll tell you this. If anyone's going to give an athlete, I mean, in this case, we're talking John Jones. If anybody's going to give John Jones anything bad, the last guy it's going to be is you. The last guy it's going to be is his manager.
But here's the thing that gets me, right? So people have to understand that my income is strictly derived based off of his.
Right.
So if I'm getting suspended or fined or banned and all that, it's detrimental to me. So what the hell do I get out of, or listen, how about this, Chael? How about this guy could be champion for 10 years, right? And so I'm going to sit here and steadily be feeding him drugs and alcohol so that he can start to diminish in his ability and lose one day and lose everything that he's built up and that I've built up with him for what? For one night for him to be happy or something? It's not the way it goes, man. A lot of this stuff people think, oh, Mouth, you're the closest guy to him, blah, blah. When I'm with him, I am. When I'm not, it's through the phone. I mean, he's not calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, hey, I'm in this situation. What do you think? I mean, it's not like that at all. And it blows my mind that this is what I get, you know what I mean, for representing John. But, you know, make no doubt about it and make no mistake about it. I enjoy representing him. There's nothing that I would have done different. You know, everything that me and him have done together has been phenomenal. I feel like we've both grown a lot together in this sport and through this sport. And I'm okay with everything that's happened. It sucks that this is the type of stuff that they write. And it's something that, you know, he's going to also have to one day deal with. Some of the things he's never done and some of the things that he has done, you know, his children are going to grow up and they're going to Google it and they're going to see it. And it's one of those things that the reality of when you're in that limelight, that comes with these things that happen. And it's unfortunate. You know, in this case for me, it's something I had nothing to do with it. And it's still like, oh, it's Malky's fault. And that's the craziest thing to me.
Yeah, and that's not fair. And I can tell you, Malky, that is not the rumor through the industry, through the guys that know you, such as myself, and that know John. There is no bad words being said about Malky and doing that stuff. Deadspin, and I've ended up in their crosshairs too, the one thing that I miscalculated was the popularity of that site. I hadn't heard of that site. I was asked about it live on a show with a guy named Dan Lebatard. He asked me about an article that they had written. I said, I don't have the foggiest idea. He thought I was gaming him. Oh, Chael's trying to avoid the question. Well, no, I really didn't know. I'd never heard of Deadspin. I go to TMZ. I surf the internet all the time.
Dude, it's the craziest thing. You don't really hear about it until they write about you or they write about somebody you really know. And then before you know it, it's like, you know. So even after that article, I still follow them on Twitter, and I watch what they do to everybody. Deflategate. They ran with that Patriot stuff. The Kardashians, they put stuff out on them all the time. Every little thing, whether it's sports, entertainment, it could be Obama, it could be Dana White, it could be anybody, dude. They just write stories. A lot of it is opinion-based. Some of it could be on the money, and some of it comes from, you know, like well-thought-out stuff, and others, it's just so off-base. It's unreal. You know what I mean? Not only did that one particular writer write things about me that were false, he wrote things about John, and you know that one piece he did about John's the greatest fighter ever. You click on it, you would think you're going to hear a story about how great a guy he is. You're hearing nothing but terrible things. And the reality of it is, half the stuff that he cited in there is all lies. It's all lies. I called the guy out on it. I'm like, listen, dude, you just wrote a bunch of lies. Well, you know, the thing is, no, it's not the well, the thing is. You just flat out lied.
Wow.
You just took your platform and lied. You lied about him, and you lied about me. And I'm not understanding where you think you could do that. Well, I mean, that's your opinion. You know, I got sources. I go, what sources did you use? Who are the sources that are close to John that can tell you, I knew he was lying the minute he said I was a bad influence? How? I don't do any of these things, so explain to me how that could, and from there I knew that. So I talked to John about certain things he cited John. John's like, this is a lie, and that's a lie. And see, Cheryl, the relationship me and John have, whether he did it or not, John's going to tell me the truth. You follow me? He doesn't need, like, listen, I'm not going to, what am I going to do, spank John? I'm going to kick his ass? John, you know, he doesn't need to answer to anybody. But if I ask him, John, did you do this? He'll flat out say to me, yes, I did this. So did this part in the story that he's writing about this, no, I didn't do that. Of course not. So it just, it's pathetic. It's really pathetic, and it sucks. It sucks to be John Jones in that situation. It sucks to be me in that situation. And yes, Deadspin is a very popular site, and I didn't know how popular they were until I realized that some of the major sites pick stuff up from them, dude. They get a lot of trash written about a lot of people. You know what I mean? This is like their, this is like it's a different version of TMZ. So TMZ breaks stories. This is the one that will kind of like break it, but in a bad way, to kind of like get, you know, really like embarrassed or destroyed, kind of. And I just don't get it.
Yeah, man, I hear you on that. Now, when you're talking about John, and he ended up in that jam over, you know, recreational or street drugs, however you want to call it. But the commission came out, and I appreciated this candidness. It's very hard to get a government agency to say, look, we were wrong. But they did. They admitted it. They've got a new executive director, and he was 17 years in the FBI. The guy has integrity, Bob Bennett. And he will admit when he's wrong, which is rare. But he did say, look, we didn't even have the right to test him for this.
Well, you call it integrity. I call it, you know, it's not really integrity, Chill. I'm sorry. I've got a huge problem with everything they did in that situation.
Well, I understand that. But they are, you know, in their defense, they did admit, they came right out and said, listen, we botched this. So tell me where you or John stands when they screw this up and they hurt his rep. What happens now?
Listen to me.
All right. Take over, brother. It's your show. Have at it, man. I'm listening.
Listen to me.
All right.
Here's the problem. You don't get to go and ruin a guy's reputation, put out this information, and then come out and say, hey, guys, we're a government agency. I've been in the FBI for 17 years. I apologize. We screwed up. That's not a screw-up, my man. That's not a screw-up. In my opinion, that's not just a screw-up. You knew that you could do nothing with those test results. You knew it had nothing to do with the competition. You knew that this guy had absolutely, it had zero weight on the fight, on John Jones or Daniel Cormier, nothing whatsoever. Why would you then turn around and go out there with it? What's your purpose in doing so?
And what is the answer? What is the answer to that question? Did you get to the bottom of it? Did they give you something that we don't know?
No, it was just a mistake. But see, I just, you know, again, Cheryl, that's like if I saw you jaywalking, it held zero bearing on my life. If I saw you go out and punch somebody in the face, for me to sit here and put it on my cell phone and then put it out to the whole world for them to see it, and then come back and say, Chael, look, I'm sorry, dude. I thought you did the good thing. You beat up a guy who was heckling you. I support you, bro. I just put the information out there. You're going to look at me like, dude, what'd you do that for? Like, what'd you get out of doing that? Did you get paid some more money? Did you get famous off of it? I mean, what are you doing it for? And so to me, like, I question the intentions of why. Because a reporter asked for the results of those tests. That test should have been destroyed. It should have been readministered. Or it should have been said, here, this is what we're testing for. This is what we're supposed to test for. This is the information we're giving you guys. Everything else could have just been left alone. But no, they had to put it out there. So in my opinion, you know, when you say integrity, and maybe I'm just, you know, bitter towards it, but I don't find it to be right. I don't find it to be lawful. I think it's a violation of many different laws out there. And, you know, right now we're currently, you know, we're going through the legal process with the commission.
Yeah, and, you know, that's interesting, Malky. That's very interesting, and I'm glad that you're defending your guy. I think that's why so many people flock to you. I think that's why you as a manager have had such success, because you do back your guy. But let me make this point for people that are listening and may not know what the process was on this, because most people are defending John, and they're saying, man, this was wrong. But here's what they ended up with from a legal standpoint. The government tested John Jones, and they openly admit that they administered the wrong test and checked for things that were none of their business. They openly admit that. However, and people are wondering, why would you make it public? My own mom asked me, she goes, why would they make this public if they realize they screwed up? Well, here's the answer. Whether you like it or not, this is the answer. Because the government did it, therefore the taxpayers paid for it. If the taxpayers pay for a test, you must let them know what it is they bought. So whether you like it or not, in the honor of transparency, they've now got to release that. Is that legal? I don't know. I think it is, but I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I just like to pretend I am. I don't know. And it sounds like you're going to get to the bottom of it.
You're one of the most charismatic, well-spoken guys. You probably should have been a lawyer. Unfortunately, in this instance, and I understand what you're trying to do, but that's like Bob Bennett coming out and saying, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. You're probably putting too much dressing on a salad. I'm just not going to eat right now. So it really makes no sense. Here's the bottom line. I thought all that extra competition in Nevada was paid for or helped funded by the UFC. There was talk that they were supposed to be paying for certain tests, and Nevada was going to uphold certain things with certain tests. And to be quite frank, I thought the fights and the money they generated from the fights paid those expenses and things of that nature. So I don't know that you can sit here and just say, well, you know, it's taxpayer money that actually... So this is the bottom line is this. There's HIPAA laws, there's privacy laws, and when you go in and test somebody for something that you're not supposed to, you violate certain laws. John was not under the impression he was getting tested for that. No one said, hey, we're testing you for this, that, or the other. It was PEDs. So to me, in my mind, okay, taxpayer paid or not, then you should just let the taxpayers know, hey, we botched the test, we screwed up. You know, this $1,500 test or whatever it is, you know, sorry, guys, this is going to be a loss. What do you get out of tarnishing this guy's reputation or putting this information out there? That's the thing I'm trying to understand. This whole taxpayers paid for it. Taxpayers pay for a lot of things that we don't find out about until it's too late, dude. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Crazy. That cost $100,000. Furniture that cost $1,000,000. I mean, let's just not go there, dude. It's not a conversation that at the end of the day, to me, the bottom line is that if you really want to, as a government agency, do things the right way, then you should do them the right way. You admit there was a certain mistake that happened. You have to get rid of the test. As soon as they found out about it, they should have retested him or had the tester come back out 3-4 days later and say, hey, we tested you on some stuff we weren't supposed to. That test is now null and void. We're going to give you a new test. And that would have been it. Destroy their results. Nobody needs to hear anything about it. Not us, not the UFC, nobody. This was on their self internally. Here's what we're going to do. That would have been the end of that story. Now, had there been a PED or anything else that had been located, then I can sit here and say, hey, you know what, that's just an extra thing that they got and whatever it is, and that test shouldn't have to be destroyed. But there was none. So what you're looking for, you don't find. You don't just get to go test a guy and take extra samples of them just because you want to. In my opinion, that's just not right.
You know, you certainly make a good argument. You make an excellent argument, and you're making me reconsider my position on it. But like anything, there's got to be debate on both sides. So that's strong. That's strong by you. Now, when you talk about, here's the thing that's going on with the UFC is there's no buffer. There's no buffer between the UFC and the commission. Like, let me give you an example. If you take the NFL, and my understanding is that you just went to an NFL manager's meeting. But with the NFL, they have a buffer known as the union, where things have to go through the union. They get processed. They get discussed. You have a dialogue before you set a rule in place. How would you compare what goes on with the NFL, where you do have a due process? You absolutely get due process. You get an unbiased third party known as a judge, as opposed to what the world of MMA goes through, where there is no due process. It is black and white, and now you can be out for 2 years with no attempt to explain extenuating circumstance.
But it's night and day, Chill. I mean, I sat in this meeting and I literally listened to, if this guy fails this test, he goes to this program. He fails this test, then he does this for the first game. If this test, I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm watching, I'm listening to 6 failed marijuana tests before a guy gets a 1-year suspension in the NFL. 6. And I'm thinking to myself, didn't Nick fail his second one and he was gone for like almost 9 months and almost like half his purse? It blew me away. And then I'm scratching my head, though, because at the same time, it's like, all right, wait a minute. What am I saying here? It's okay to smoke weed. It's okay to do drugs. It's okay to do PEDs. I'm not saying that. And I started scratching myself. What is the union really saying here? And as I'm listening and as I'm really diving into it, who takes the test gets negotiated as far as the collector of the sample? This just can't be a guy that works for the NFL coming and collecting the samples, right?
Right.
This has got to be done by a third party completely separate from the NFL and from the union. So, but they agree on it together. So the union and the NFL picks it out. Like, just like the doctors, like who's going to be making these medical decisions? The NFL and the union do it together. Therefore, it's paid for by both sides. So now Dr. Lombardo, for example, who's the guy who's been the NFL's doctor for years, now became paid by both. He's an expert on all these things. But so now his loyalty can't just be to the guy, one guy who's paying him. Now he has two people paying him. So if he screws the union over or any of these players over, he's out of a job. And I'm sure it's a very well-paid job. You get what I'm saying? So
yeah.
They changed it. And the thing is, what's crazy is that, you know, they're saying, they sat there and said, if a guy's cheating, he deserves to get punished. That's a fact. But who's going to punish him? What gives the league the right to come in and say, hey, wait a second, Ray Rice, you punched your wife in the face. You're done with football. It's over. You're basically taking somebody's ability to earn away. Now, listen, Ray Rice is a scumbag. We all can agree on that. We all probably would love to just handcuff him to a tree and just take shots at him or let him get in the octagon with one of you guys, right or wrong. And I think that there's 1,000 more punishments that we can put down and say he would be deserving of. But again, that's my opinion. That's your opinion. What gives Roger Goodell that right to just levy this on him? What they're saying is it's not fair for the NFL or the arbitrators that the NFL picks to just give out these type of rulings. Let's get somebody that's impartial. If this impartial person feels this way, then okay. But at least it's somebody who's given both sides a chance to present a case. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm trying. You're absolutely right. 2-year ban because you smoked a joint or because you might have done a PED. Again, I'm completely against. You got to remember, you're talking to a guy who doesn't smoke, doesn't drink. There's no PEDs. Enhance my performance for what? You got me? So I'm not into any of that stuff. But you're telling me that a guy, because here's the thing, Chael, here's the thing. In the NFL, they have a list of banned substances, just like we do when it comes to WADA or USADA or whatever it is, those lists and all that stuff, okay? So a lot of things are banned, and there's a lot of things that you would take every day that are banned. But they go a step beyond. This product made by this company, this protein, is banned. Don't take it. Because if you use this as an excuse, it's not going to help you. We are telling you now, this is not good stuff to take. Don't take this fat burner. Don't take this testosterone booster. Don't take. So you have a list. They go above it. Like when you walk into GNC, there's products on those shelves that are tainted.
Absolutely.
Vitamins. So what I'm upset with is how all the fighters jumped up the minute that Dana Lorenzo made an announcement saying 2-year suspension, but we are looking to, we would support a 4-year suspension. Well, look, if that's what ends up happening because you get somebody who's a repeated user or somebody who's just constantly breaking the rules, then I can understand that. If this is agreed upon by the fighters and management, then let's do it. But to sit here and tell me, I've got guys on my roster flat out right now, I know for a fact, I could put my hands in the fire, know that they don't do anything, much less PEDs, right? What if they took a supplement and they failed for elevated levels of whatever, okay? Or they took something that had another substance in it that was on a list that we didn't know about or that they test for that we don't know about. You don't have to just do steroids to be considered cheating. You follow me?
For sure.
And he bought for Benadryl. He bought for Benadryl. The guy had an allergy to something, and now it's like, oh, because then there's all these theories. It could be masking this or doing that. What if he just took it because he was allergic to some shit, and the fucking guy took Benadryl? It blows my mind. And under these new rules, he would just have a blatant 4-year suspension. Now, chill. Guys that are in their mid-20s or early 20s could probably sustain a 4-year suspension. Other guys, their career is over. So you're not just saying, hey, I'm going to fine you or I'm going to suspend you. You're basically saying your career is over without any type of due process. And so what I'm saying is, fighters, you have to be smarter than this. And everyone else that's involved in this business has to be a little smarter. We have to get to Dana Lorenzo. We have to get some dialogue going between this side and that side so that they understand, hey, there's some concerns with what you're saying. Because if my guy, a Carlos Condit or a Ben Henderson, went and popped for something, you know, on that list, I know for a fact these guys are not sitting here trying to see. And 95% of my roster, I could put my hands in the fire and say, no way you'll ever find the PED, right?
Sure.
But under these rules, if they took a supplement that they had no clue might have been tainted, and if something pops up in a test somewhere, my guys are gone. Their career's over.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, Malky, I always I don't like the term PED. I don't like that because it's misleading. There are things on the ban list that are not it's not about PED. Everybody's getting this wrong. The UFC press conference got this wrong. ESPN gets it wrong. Everybody wants to talk about PEDs. That's not what the commission's looking for. The commission comes out and says that's what they're looking for. That's not true. They have a banned list and they have an allowed list. There are performance-enhancing drugs that are on the allowed list. There are non-performance enhancers that are on the banned list. So this whole message that's going out to everybody talking about PEDs isn't accurate. I just had Carlos Barzon, world champion. She's subject to these tests at the highest of levels because she will always be main event or a title fight as long as she has that belt, and she will be subject to enhanced testing. When I told her some of the stuff on the list, she was silent. She had no idea. She thought we were talking about illegal drugs and steroids. And I'm going, no, Carla, perfectly legal drug. Anderson Silva is in a jam right now over Benadryl to help get a good night's sleep. That's absurd.
Well, let me say this to you. I don't want me to interrupt you, but so if this was the NFL, Anderson Silva's test would have never come out right now until they would have gone through the due process. Because let's say for whatever, cause let me ask you a question, okay? And people are telling me, oh, Anderson Silva's been cheating his whole life. Okay, listen, if that's an argument you want to make, if that's an opinion you want to form, I'm okay with it because you're entitled to that. But based on what? So if this guy's been cheating for 20 freaking years, you're telling me, as an intelligent person, he decided to now become sloppy on his potentially last fight of his career, on his comeback fight. He all of a sudden now didn't know how to beat the system. I don't know if I necessarily buy that. I don't think that that's the case. I think that maybe, and this is my opinion, he was hurt. Doctors gave him some stuff. Maybe he knew about it. Maybe he did it. Maybe he was in some pain. Maybe, you know, whatever it was that happened with that injury, maybe he was fully aware he was doing something wrong and he was cheating. But I'm sitting here looking at it and saying to myself, what was considered the GOAT in our sport, a man of class and integrity, and seemed to me like a good person, right? Good for our sport. He helped build the Brazilian fan base to where it was. You know, put a lot of MMA on his back in that country. His reputation is destroyed, right?
Yep.
So maybe in the end, Chael, it's exactly what he deserves. But don't you think that maybe he deserved a little bit of due process first? Let him put his side out, because he's denying it. He's sitting here saying, guys, I didn't cheat. I've never cheated. I don't need to be a cheater. And there's a part of me that believes him. Maybe I'm being naive. Maybe I'm being a little, you know, facetious and all this and sitting here thinking that, well, he wouldn't do it. But I don't know. That's the point. I haven't really gotten to see what his defense is. And maybe he'll have a press conference in a month and say, guys, you know what? I did cheat. I'm sorry. The hell with it. Now I understand. Or there'll be a fall guy. Or maybe he has a legit reason. Maybe there's something there that we just don't know about, right? But we've already made the court of public opinion has already ruled. And that's what I'm having a huge issue with. Give these guys their due process before you tarnish their reputations and their images. Now, you go through the whole process, comes out that this is all a bunch of bullshit, he's cheating, this, that, and the other. You know, companies want to drop him, all this stuff, it's going to happen, right? UFC wants to suspend them, ban them, you know, fine them, whatever, that's all going to happen. But what about Kung Lee? Has Kung Lee rebounded from that whole you're on HGH thing and you're doing steroids thing?
Yeah, and he was innocent.
That's my point. But if it was the NFL, then Kung Lee would have, the results would have never come out like that. He would have had his due process. He would have been able to submit his, you know, defense. And then they would have realized, oh, my God, he's right. And they would have went away. And we never would have heard about it, right? And Kung Lee would have came out just the same as normal. And he probably would be still fighting for the UFC instead of being in the bind that he is right now with them and trying to sue them over this stuff. You get what I'm coming from? My whole thing is I just want to see the UFC fighters become a little bit more professional in how they handle these issues. As a fighter, you know, it kind of showed me where these guys really stood. When UFC 151 happened and John's fight got canceled or the whole thing got canceled, all those fighters on the card just turned on John. Oh, you know, I got rent to pay, John, you know, And I remember being around John and seeing it, and it really bothered him that his own peers, instead of seeing where he was coming from, you know what I mean, were upset with him. And I remember they wanted him to fight you, and it was the whole thing and all that. And the truth, and I remember you making points, you know, hey, when you're in a bar and you need to fight, it's 7 seconds. There's not 7 days and all that. And listen, everything you said was absolutely right. And John's only point was, hey, guys, I'm a professional fighter. I'm not a thug. I don't fight in bars. I don't fight in clubs. My only thing here is to train, get prepared for a fight, and I would be disrespecting Chael. Like, if Chael was like a cakewalk, you know what I mean, for me to just take on a seven-day notice. This was his argument to me. He was like, Mouth, the guy's a southpaw. He's this. He's that. He's a wrestler. I'm fighting a completely different guy. I am not going to just go put my belt on the line just to pretend I'm some tough guy. I'm the best in the world. I'll fight Chael. Just not going to fight him in 7 days. It's not my fault. I'm not the one who got injured. Right or wrong. And then, you know, he makes a lot of good, but nobody listened. I listened. Some media members listened. A lot of other fans listened and supported him. But the ones that really didn't were his own peers, just coming out of the woodwork. his own teammates talking trash and this and that and the other. And what's crazy is that one thing that kind of led him to make the decision not to fight, and it was something that was, you know, kind of funny to me. The one example that they gave him to take this fight was, you know, Matt Hughes took it on a notice sort of like this. And he said, well, what happened in that fight? He lost. And he was like, wait, so you want me kind of just to follow the same footsteps? He's like, I'm not doing it, man. He's like, I just want my training camp and all that other stuff. And in hindsight, Chael, you know what I mean? Maybe he would have taken the fight. I still think he probably would have done the same thing. I would have always hoped that maybe he would have just taken the fight and fought you and called it a day. But you get where I'm coming from? Like, it just shows how divided everyone is on everything. And it sucks because what they don't realize is that one day they may be in a situation for something. It might not be PEDs. It may not be domestic violence. You know what I mean? It could be anything else. And the reality of it is there is no unbiased person involved. The commission directly profits off of the fight. The UFC profits off of it, and the fighter profits off of it. So they're not one of those three parties should be making a ruling on something that's going on. It should be whoever has the complaint, whoever has a defense, and somebody that's completely unbiased to handle it. And that's my opinion, and that's where I am, whether it's PEDs, domestic violence, assault and battery, whatever you want to call it.
Well, Malky, you're ahead of the curve, brother. I guarantee you in a short period of time, call it 12 months, 15, 18 months, everybody will be mentally where you're at right now. What people don't understand is what they don't understand. And there is so much misinformation out there. I mean, I heard Ariel Helwani, who's a respected guy for news, go on UFC Tonight and say, well, eventually he'll get his day in court. That's a quote. Well, no, he won't. You do not get a day in court. Court is where you have 12 members of your peers that make up a jury and a disinterested third party, which is a judge. That has never happened. That is not what these guys get. And people also come out and go, well, let's give them due process. There is no due process. Read the Constitution. That's where that right. term came from. These guys are not getting due process. And when these guys end up in jams over silly, ridiculous things, such as the Benadryl that you and I keep touching on, they're going to lose their license for 2 years, and there is no hearing.
Advil, you have a headache. You take some ibuprofen.
Absolutely.
You're done.
Absolutely.
And here's the thing. Here's the crazy thing about it, right? Up until this failed test with John, because I haven't had anyone else fail for anything under my management, under my watch, right? So this was the first thing. I didn't even know some of the stuff that was on this banned list. Some of this stuff are things that my mother takes. She takes Advil when she has a headache.
Absolutely.
It's so funny. I walk into her house the other day. She's taking some ibuprofen. She said she's not feeling well. She's got a headache. And I said, if you were fighting, you'd be failing the test right now. And she looked at me shocked. She's like, what the hell are you talking about? I said, yeah, Mom, that right there is on the banned list. And she thought, wait, the fighters have aches and pains, don't they? I'm like, yeah. So what are they supposed to do? Get a massage. She just looked at me funny. Like, what are you talking about? I mean, but you know what? That's the thing. It's like, somebody came out and said, oh, ibuprofen relaxes you a little. Well, that might be a little bit of a performance enhancer, or you might become numb to pain. Well, we're going to take that out. You don't have to take that. Oh, and that's my – so when people say to me the difference between the NFL and MMA, UFC, the difference is that the union negotiates every little thing. Like I said, from who collecting the sample to when they're allowed to collect the sample to how much time an athlete has to respond to a request for a sample – where and when this stuff can, you know what I'm saying? Like, whether it's in the facility, at their home, if they're out of the country, they're out of town, they have these apps that they give these athletes so that they can be located. They've got apps on their phones that they give them so that you go into GNC. Dude, let me tell you, just put it to you like this, Chael. How about in the NFL, if there is a company right now, let's just say right now you played running back for the Seattle Seahawks, you're beast mode, and you walk into your GNC and you've been using, whatever, Muscle Farm pre-workout, okay?
All right.
And Muscle Farm comes and says, hey, Chael Sonnen, you're beast mode. We want to give you $5 million to represent our brand, right?
Probably right.
The same you're making NFL, maybe less, maybe more, whatever. It's an endorsement deal. You go to your agent, you say, hey, here's what I want to do, bang, bang, and bang, right? All of a sudden, you know that if Muscle Farm was on that list, if one of their products was on that list of banned substances, you as an athlete are not allowed to get an endorsement by that company.
That's helpful. Cannot. That would be very helpful if that list existed.
Hold on. It does exist. It exists in the NFL. So what that means is in MMA, where every nutrition company from Gamma O to Muscle Farm to Muscle Tech to Monster Milk, to they're all allowed to just come in and do it. They're just allowed to sponsor every single one. I'm not saying those companies have anything on that banned list. But what I am saying is a fighter can just go get it, not even use their supplements, Chael, right? Put that stuff on their back, put it on their butts, go out and fight. And little do we know, there's a bunch of 18, 19-year-old kids that are buying a test booster that might be tainted, that's on a banned list in another sport because it's been tested and proven to not be something that you should take. Because they sat in this seminar and told me, one out of seven ingredients on the bottle, on your average stuff, in your GNC or vitamin shop, is part of the banned list. Please, we beg you, agents, get with your clients and make sure that they are reading it. You just got to take your phone, scan the label, and it will pop up for you. We don't have that in MMA. So what happens if one guy one day fails and uses this as a defense? Or this is really the truth. He's got no defense. It's not allowed. And that's the problem I'm having. It's not so much 4 years against 2 years or against 1 year. Or what are you saying, Malk? You want him to have no suspension? No, not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you want to suspend the guy, suspend the guy. But let's be reasonable. Let's not just sit here and say, oh, Chael, you came in here? Okay, well, you know what? Today, we not really like what color suit you're wearing. Yeah, you took a couple of this and a little bit of that, and you've been great to us in the past. Well, today you're going to get a four-month suspension. Oh, Wanderlei, you didn't take the test? We're going to ban you for life. You're out of here, buddy. Well, how does that work? Well, what gives anyone the right to give one guy one suspension versus another? You follow where I'm coming from?
And absolutely.
Things, well, wait, you failed twice? Well, now you're going to get a two-year suspension. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. You failed three times? Oh, well, you know what? We'll give you 2.5 years. Wait, where's the fucking guideline? Give me something that tells me what we're allowed to do, what we're not allowed to do here. When John and Cormier got into that little scrap, they found that John started that fight. I'm not sure how. They went head-to-head, face-to-face, just like other people do. Right?
Right.
Cormier puts his face on his face. Cormier puts his hands around his neck and pushes him. Okay, John retaliates. They're both wrong. Who takes full responsibility? Find John way more money than you find Cormier because they make different amounts of money? Well, how does that make sense? We're just going to find your percentage of the purse? Well, here's the other thing. Okay, I can understand the percentage of the purse, but they gave one less hours compared to the other one giving them. Well, how does that work then, Chael?
No, I hear you, man. There's some major confusion on it. When you come down to the drug testing, you know, crimes are not created the same, Malky. If somebody robs a bank or somebody runs a red light, those are both crimes, but they're treated completely different. In the world of banned substances, and again, it's not performance enhancers, guys. And there's a banned list and an accepted list. In the world of banned substances, all crimes are created the same. If you take Advil, you will lose your license for 2 years. If you take an anabolic steroid, you will lose your license for 2 years. That's a problem. And the argument, Malky, is that this is the most respected list because this is what the Olympians go through. Well, no, it's not respected. The Olympians don't respect it. The Olympians are amateurs, and most of them are children. Most of them are under 18 years of age. My point to that is they're broke. They're not going to take the IOC to an international court because they can't. So the Olympians have never spoke up and pushed back on this ridiculousness. But what people aren't understanding is they're not pushing back because they can't. They don't have a voice. They're 14 and 17. And they can't get to an international court. If you're an athlete from China, and this happened to the Chinese gymnast, they took her gold medal because she tested positive for a billionth of a trace of ibuprofen, street name Advil. They took her gold medal. They banned her for life. She can't go as a Chinese citizen, even if she was rich, and go take on the IOC that's located in France. She can't go take them on an international court. It's not realistic. It would be $1 million. There's only a couple of people to have ever done it. And those are cyclists in the Tour de France, and most of them were found innocent. The court threw it out. But the point is they were pros and they had the money to defend themselves.
Correct. And that's the thing. So it's not only – here's my problem, Chael, because, again, I'm like most people. If you're doing steroids, if you're doing things that are illegal to try to get an edge over someone in competition – and I'm not talking about ibuprofen and stuff. You're literally in there putting a needle in your ass, taking pills, doing stuff like that to get an edge over someone else, and you're cheating, you deserve whatever comes down to you.
For
I
sure.
I think that they also deserve – they also deserve their due process. Like, can I just say this to you? a criminal, whether it's a child molester, a murderer, whatever it may be, is appointed a public defender in the very worst cases to defend him if he can't afford it, and is given the opportunity and the right to defend himself. So all I'm saying is it just needs to be the same way, because fighters that are listening, if you don't listen and you think that, oh, yeah, let's just ban everybody and call it a day, which is fine. If that's what you guys all agree on, then okay, right? But then remember, the same iron fist that rules on that will rule on everything else, from cursing on TV to, you know, getting into a fight backstage. And you don't know what you might end up with. You don't know what – there's no laws or bylaws that say, hey, if I do this, I can have this. I said something I shouldn't have said. You're fine. Dude, listen to me. In the NFL, a guy throws a football into the stands, he's fined. He does it one time, it's a certain number. He does it a second time, that number's a little more. He does it a third, it's all negotiated. It's all discussed, okay? You don't wear the right uniform, which we're about to go into, correct? So you walk around with a pair of Nikes come July 13th, you're in trouble. You're not allowed to do that. It doesn't matter if the Reeboks fit you good or not. You are not allowed to do that anymore. Hey, you do it once, we might slap you on the wrist. You do it twice, we might suspend you. Do it three times, well, we could ban you. We could do whatever we want. And that's where I say, wait a minute, let's sit down and at least have some dialogue. Let's talk. Let's discuss what you guys really want on management. And when I say management, I'm talking about UFC, the management council of the UFC. And let's really discuss what we think is appropriate on this side. So at least we know. We want to get the rules and regulations. We want to understand what we have here, what we don't have, what we can and can't do, and what is the punishments out front. So it doesn't matter whether you're an undercard fighter in your first fight in the UFC or you're Cain Velasquez and you're the heavyweight champ. It's going to come across the board, because I just don't find that selling somebody, well, you make $500,000 because you're the champ, or $1 million because you're the champ, so you're going to pay $100,000 because you decided to cover up the Reebok logo. Because you know, in the NFL, if you cover up the Nike logo and wear something, you can get fines for that. If you don't, some people say, well, man, you know, the UFC, they're very strict. Well, look, the NFL is too. You put on a pair of Beats by, Dr. Dre headphones, you're getting fined. If you don't answer interview questions to the media, you can be fined. But, again, they don't just get to fine a guy. It's all laid out in advance. It's all been told and explained. There's, obviously rules. And if you do get fined and you don't find this fine to be appropriate or correct, then you have the opportunity to appeal it, and it gets heard by somebody who's not the person who gave the fine, and it's not somebody that you picked. It's a mutual, agreed-upon arbitrator or a judge, depending on what type of case it is, and then you get, a decision, and that's what you have to live with, good or bad. And the money goes to charity. Therefore, the person who's passing out this fine can't just sit here and say, well, I'm going to fine you this and then keep the money. This is going to go somewhere else. So either which way, if I don't come from, and those are the things that I would like to see, fighters get, is just some sort of way or opportunity to have some sort of open dialogue with Dana and Lorenzo collectively, where they can sit down and say, hey, look, guys, we understand what you're trying to accomplish on this side, but here's what we think on this side is fair, and we need to be heard, and there needs to be some sort of, back and forth. And that, to me, is what's, my biggest issue, my biggest concern. It's not so much you want to punish people hard. I'm okay with that. But for the first time, on all substances, on all things, I don't know if that's fair. I just don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you completely. You're talking about process, and you are right on that. Now, listen, to move on this, let me tell you a story. Let me get this whole thing out. If you want to respond, go ahead, and if you don't, that's okay too. But here is the rumor on John Jones and his rehab. The rumor was he goes into rehab, he signs in, and then he signs right back out and walks out and leaves. I have no idea if that's true, but I do want to tell you this. If he did that, that's funny. That might be the single coolest thing that I've heard of him doing. If that's true, and you can talk about the appropriateness all you want, fans that are listening, but if John Jones signed himself in just so he could put out a press release that says I checked into rehab, and then he signed his ass back out, got in his car, and went home, that's funny. To me,
all the fans that are listening, everyone else that's listening, see, that's Chael trying to bait me into saying, oh, yeah, he did that. He's so cool. Don't buy that one second.
I don't want you to say it's cool. I would love if you responded, though.
But I will respond to it. First of all, I personally and my family have never had to deal with anyone who's been addicted to any type of substance, of abuse. I've never had that. So I didn't know how this stuff works, okay? When John went into rehab, he went into rehab. The doctors there make the recommendations based on what they see, based on tests that they do. They're the ones who said, you don't need to be here more than tonight. They tested him. They talked to him. They interviewed with him for the whole time he was there during the day and all of the following day. And they're the ones who said to him, you need to leave, and here's your prescription. Here's what we're going to give you. You're going to come test with us. You're going to meet with us. Boom. And John's doing all of that stuff. And John does not have a problem or an addiction to cocaine or any drug, for that matter. Okay? He doesn't do PEDs. John goes out like all of us do, Chael. John will have a couple of drinks when he's out. John will do what John does. But there's no, and again, this is where I got, you know, a little offended. You guys think that if I knew John was sitting here doing cocaine every day or he was addicted to it, I would have just sat back and watched and said, okay, cool? I mean, of course not. It's not something that I would sit here and condone. And that's not what happened. He was in a situation. He was at a dinner that turned into let's go out to party because it was a friend's birthday. You know, guys started. And the thing is, what's crazy is that even he has told me, you know, Malk, no way in a million years would you have ever told me I'd be a couple weeks out from a fight and I would have even been at a club partying. That's not something I would have done. But it was a friend's birthday. I went. One thing led to another. And that's how the whole thing went down. So he went into rehab. He did his thing. They sat there. They're the ones who said, John, leave. If they would have said, John, stay for 10 days, he would have stayed for 10 days. He would have had no choice. So you know what I mean? It's just we as a team collectively sat with him and said, hey, if there's a problem, then you should go and let them tell you that you have a problem and let them fix it. Because, again, I'm not with them every day. Nobody's with them every single day, every night of the day. So how is anyone going to make that decision if we don't necessarily know, right? I know. Because I'm with him a lot. I know. He doesn't have a problem.
Well, there it is. There it is right there. I liked my version better, but there it is. And I appreciate you clearing the air. I got to ask you one last question, Malik, before we go. Matt Mitrione seems to be annoyed with you. And he gave a statement that said, I would step on Malky to avoid a mud puddle. What is Mitrione's problem? What's going on there?
You know what? I think Mitrione's upset with the fact that the biggest single-handed dumbest thing he ever did was getting on national television and firing me and giving me all that notoriety that he did. Why he continues to talk about me or feel that way about me, I don't know. I thought we squashed this a long time ago. You know, that whole situation with Matt.
Wait, I actually don't know this story. Mitrione fired you on national TV?
It was his third fight or something like that. So here's the thing. So at the Magic Show, I run into Matt Mitrione. We start talking about doing sponsors. It was 3 weeks before his fight. Matt was a heavyweight who was 2-0 or 3-0 at the time, just coming off the Ultimate Fighter. Nobody knew who he was. And to be quite frank, he had his wife or his ex-wife at the time, and her brother or his brother-in-law, I'm not sure if it was from his side or her side, whatever it was, but they were the ones handling his sponsorships. I had 3 weeks to come in, work his sponsors, and they had already damaged everything before I got there. So I was coming in to patch things up. So I was able to get him a couple of, it was about $5,000. And here's the crazy thing about it, right? You look at his opponents and people that were on that card from top to bottom. Matt made about $12,000 in his clothing from his shirt and his shorts on a deal he had with Tap Out that was previous to all this, right? Plus another $5,000 that I got him. He was pissed off because, you know, lo and behold, Nakikawa the Great supposed to get me at least $25,000, $30,000 in extra sponsors, which, Chael, at that time, had I had the proper time and the fact that no one was in the way and hadn't damaged things before I got there, I probably would have gotten him more money. But I only got him $5,000. So he was pissed off, but he made a total of $17,000.
That's a good sponsorship. That's a good night right there.
I know it is. I know that for a fact, but he was not happy with what I got him. So it's fine with me. He didn't want to work with me no more. He went on TV after he won his fight. He picked up the microphone. He said, Nakikawa, you're fired. Now, there had been other things that had happened that were not of my end, but from his end, between him and his, you know, his whole family situation and all that. And then when I called him, I said, Matt, you did this, but you kind of know the situation I was in. You asked me to do certain things in particular, and you know what? As a man, I'm not going to elaborate, but he knows. And I sat there, and I took the bullet for him on a lot of different things, and I was shocked that his biggest thing was, you know, because he said that I disrespected his wife because I wouldn't take her calls and I wouldn't really give her information in reference to him when she was asking me for it, which I was following directions. And by the way, Chael, just so you know, Ben Henderson, Carlos Condit, John Jones, even Frank Mir. You guys can go on my Instagram page after this fight Sunday. I posted a picture of Frank, and she commented something on the bottom of how much, you know, they love me and this and that and the other and all this stuff. And I've dealt with all their wives. I've never in my life disrespected anyone's wife, including Matt's. I just do what I'm told. And if you, as my clients, say to me, hey, my wife, open book, let her know everything, then I will let her know everything. I will talk to her about everything openly and freely without any problems. But when I sign a contract with a fighter, that contract says that I have a fiduciary duty to that fighter and that I have a level of confidentiality with that fighter, not to put their information out there that they don't want out there. You understand where I'm coming from?
Absolutely. And you're not the first guy to run into this very problem where a guy's wife calls up and the manager's got to go, look, man, I don't have a deal with you. I got it with your husband. If he needs questions answered, he's got to call me. You're not the first to be in this spot.
So you know, I was in that spot. I was told to handle it a certain way. I handled it a certain way. You know, if she felt that I was being disrespectful, it's like I told him right after, you know, that night happened, I said, Matt, you know, I would never disrespect your wife. I wouldn't disrespect you. I wouldn't disrespect anybody. I'm not that type of guy, especially when it comes to somebody's wife. That's not my style. I mean, listen, you can go down the list of my fighters, whether it was Alan Belcher, who I only dealt with Ashley, because she's the one that kind of handled that, whether it's John's fiance, Jesse, who, whether it's flights and this and that. You know, I mainly deal with John, but she's a very big part of things there. And Frank's wife, I mean, totally, you know what I mean, like, she's like a co-manager, pretty much.
She's great. She's awesome.
You know, and she's the best. You know what I mean? And they will all tell you, never once have I ever disrespected them. Never once would I ever sit there and violate any type of relationship I have with my fighter for them either. That's just the way I am. So I don't know where his beef is still lying. I don't know what the problem is, because I don't know if he's even with his wife anymore or not. And I've seen him since. I've said what's up to him. We've said what's up to each other, and that's it. I know he's a Black Zillion. I don't get along with Glenn Robinson. I don't like the Black Zillion camp as a whole. Not necessarily the fighters, but just that whole, you know, entity of what Glenn Robinson and Frank Smith stand for and all that stuff. They're not my guys. You know what I mean? They're a bunch of phonies, sheeps wolves in sheep clothing is how I see them. Rashad, Anthony Johnson, Tyrone Spahn, all those guys, I'm cool with all of them. I like them all. I think they're all good dudes. You know what I mean? I don't have anything against any of those guys. I don't know what Matt's beef is, but again, if he would step on me to avoid stepping into a puddle, you sound hurt, and I'm not sure why. Because I got him the $5,000. He got his $11,000 or $12,000. He got from Tap Out. He made $17,000 as a whole. He made more money that night than most people that were on that undercard that was televised, except for maybe the main fight. Okay, I know the type of job I do. I've retained 98% of my clients since I've been in this business, including my very first one, including champions who get recruited every day. So to me, I don't know what it stems from. That's kind of what happened between me and him. I've had no interaction or dealing with him since that day, other than the fact I'm going to go on these shows. I'm going to say my side, Matt. I'm going to keep it very respectful, but I'm asking you to keep your side respectful because I don't want to put out there anything more than I have to. Let's just leave it alone. And he agreed. He respectfully did that. I've never spoken about it again. Why somebody sat there and asked him about me being a bad influence on John, or for him to even know it. I mean, look, dude, let's just call a spade a spade. He can't even keep a manager longer than a couple months anyway. From what I understand, he's not even being managed by Glenn, or maybe he is. I don't care. Matt Mitchell is Matt Mitchell. Whatever beef he has with me, he can call me anytime he wants. We can talk about it. I can see him wherever he wants to sit. He lives here in South Florida, or he trains down here. You know, this is my town, bro. So wherever he wants to meet up, I'll be more than happy to sit down. We can have dinner, have a cup of coffee, and he can tell me to my face whatever issues he's having, because I don't deal with that guy. I don't benefit from him. I don't interfere with anything he's got going on. I don't talk about him. I don't care.
Well, I tell you what, the message is delivered. Matt Mitrione listens to this show. He tweets me often, so there it is right there. I think that everything's fine. It sounds like you wanted to part ways. You guys parted ways, and that's the end of it. But I've got my answer, so thank you.
Chael, it's been years. So why my name is coming back? But again, you know what it is? Some reporter asked him a question and brought my name up, and he responded. I'm sure he's giving a great interview and decided to make some sort of headlines with it. I don't know. Listen, from what I do know, I don't think. And maybe I shouldn't say I don't know, or I do know, because I don't know. But from what I think, me and Matt don't have any type of beef. I haven't dealt with him or talked to him at least in 3 years. This happened before John was even the champ, I think, back in September of, like, 2011. Maybe John just won the belt, or was it in 10, September 2010? Something to that effect. Again, this is what I'm saying to you. I don't know where all this stuff, why he would talk about me today. But, you know, hey, again, Matt, if you're listening, thank you very much. The night that you fired me, I think I gained like 25,000 Twitter followers because of you. You know what I mean? Everything about me went up through the roof. You know what I mean? You helped my profile. You made people know who I was. And I got to absolutely thank you for that, because that was kind of one of those career-defining moments. Although you fired me, and it should have been a negative thing for me, it ended up being a positive thing, and I will forever be grateful to you for it.
All right.
Matter of fact, if in your next fight, instead of thanking the Black Zillions and everything else, if you can just tell the world one more time that you think that you would step on me to get past the puddle, I would appreciate it, because it'll go, you know, I'll end up doing the rounds again, Chael, and then everybody will get me on their show to ask me what's going on, the whole nine, and I'll just tell them the same thing I told you, but I will continue to thank Matt for that one night.
Malky, my final word to you is tell your brother I said hello. I haven't seen him since England. He's a great guy, and I appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much, and I'll let him know.
Cool. Take care. See you, Malky.
Take care, buddy.
Malky Kawad, ladies and gentlemen, never say that he's short on words. He sure made my job easy today. There is one point that I would make to him. I did feel he was defensive at times. I thought that he had a few things to get off his chest. Malky has a very good reputation, and it didn't start that way. He came off very brash, and he was open, and he talked about that at the beginning of the show. He said, man, I was doing anything to get my name out there, and he did, and it's true, and he rubbed some people the wrong way. But over time, he is a very respected manager. People like to work with him, and he talked about going to the NFL managers meeting. He is branching into representing National Football League athletes. He's very good at what he does. He's a go-getter, as you could tell. He's full of energy. The guy does not get tired. I think that those things are squashed between he and Matt Mitrione. I wasn't attempting to open quite as big of a Pandora's box as I did there, but there we have it. You've heard from Mitrione. We have Carla Esparza, world champion and $1,000 Sunday eater. I don't have $1,000 to go throw away on a Sunday, but I got to tell you, I need to know what that tastes like. She said it had gold flakes and gold leaves on it. I've never eaten gold, and I don't know that I want to. But if I do, I promise I'll come back and tell you all how it tasted. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.